We are Dukes and Bell. Chris is in for Mike today. We start off every day and every hour by saying, hey, man. There is a lot going on, including Braves news we will get to. We will talk to Grant McCauley here in less than 10 minutes. Stay tuned for that. We'll give you an update on the Falcons and talk about a player making a jump and also the NBA Finals. Last night, were you not entertained last night?
Oh, it was great.
It was good. It was good. And by the way, you know, when you've got a 14-point lead at home, you're not supposed to lose, but the Knicks come back and beat the Spurs. We'll dive in a little bit deeper later in the hour. And the one person I'm blaming, and it's not who you think it is, coming up here on the show. Turtle, as we start talking about all the things that are going on with the Falcons right now, by the way, and I know you went on your diatribe about Kevin Stefanski, which I agree with you. I think you're right. I think people need to give him a chance, just like I'm giving T-U-A an opportunity to help this team and to prove to us. But what are you feeling good about? Like, what makes you feel really good right now about the Falcons? We haven't seen them play anybody, this version of the Falcons. But what makes you feel really good about where this is and where it potentially can go?
I'll give you two things right off the jump.
All right.
Matt Ryan.
Okay.
Matt Ryan has been nothing short of uber impressive since he walked through those doors. The way he's spoken, the way he's conducted his business, the way it feels like there is a new energy at Flowery Branch. And Carl, I love his no-nonsense approach. Mm. We're not playing favorites. We don't owe anybody anything. If we feel like you're not here for the best interest of the team long term, you're not going to be here. So that's number one. Number two, I don't think this is being talked about enough, Carl. I think the Falcons have a top 3-2 secondary in the NFL with Terrell Brothers, yes. Watts, and Bates.
Yeah, I agree.
That's shutdown right there.
Look, the Matt Ryan element, and I may have said this, you know, via social media a few months ago, maybe last month, when I said this may go down as the best hire for Arthur Blank since he's on the team. Now, the proof is going to be sustainable success. And you know, again, multiple playoff runs, hopefully Super Bowl runs. There's a lot of things that go into that. But when you feel like we feel, and I'm not just talking about you and I think most people I've run into talking about Matt Ryan feel the same way. It's almost like, you know what this is like? When you go to your boy and you're like, why didn't we do this earlier?
Yeah.
Right? Like, why didn't we do this before? And part of it is because it wasn't the vision. The vision has always been you go hire a general manager, and then Rich McKay was in charge, and he was the guy you answer to. And, like, there was this pecking order, and this is how we've done it. And for the first time, we're not going to do it that way.
You just had a lot of hairs on backs of necks stand up across the city, Carl.
Why? What are you talking about?
You invoked a name that we haven't heard in quite some time.
Y'all leave Rich is out of the picture.
That is a name I have not heard in quite
Rich
some time.
Rich
Carl.
Is doing fine, man. Look, I still enjoy when we see you, Rich, talking football. His football mind is amazing. But the point is, like, you had this structure and this order, and this is the way you did it. And now it just feels like, why didn't we do this before? Why couldn't we have done this, like, 3-4 years ago? Either way, I do agree with you. The secondary is my least concern. We're going to go into camp. I don't even know how much I'll be over there watching the secondary. That's my least concern. Xavier Watts, stud. Jesse Bates, you know what he is. AJ, look, I'm with you. Billy Bowman's going to be that guy, too, once he gets back healthy. He was a ball player last year. But what about Jalen Walker? And how good do you feel about Walker and his jump in year two? Every coach that I've ever been around always talks about this in the NFL. Oh, year 1 to 2, then 2 to 3, and then 3 to 4 is like he's coming to his own. Some guys get it immediately. James Pierce Jr. comes in and gets 10.5 sacks. You go, well, he could be a dude. And let me tell you something. If he comes out this year, because I think he's going to play for us, and he gets another 10.5 or 11 or 12, then we can start having that conversation. Was last year an aberration, or was it this is who this guy is consistently going to be? Consistency is the key. How do you feel about Jalen Walker? Because I think as much as we talk about the things you feel good about, this is the one thing that I don't know if we got the best of Jalen last year. He played really well.
He wasn't healthy all year.
But that's the deal. So this is something like you go, okay, what is this going to be in year two under Jeff Ulbrich and this staff?
Honestly, Carl, it's not him.
What is it?
The people around him. are going to have a big determination in how much success he's able to have. Carl, can I ask you a serious question?
Please do.
Who's lining up at edge if Pierce isn't ready to start the season, if he's suspended four games on the opposite side of Jalen Walker?
Well, it's going to be one of these potential...
Samson, Abukam.
That's right. Free agents
Aziz
that we went and picked up. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
That's a big
issue. Because you went out and you signed...
You spackled.
Four experienced defensive end slash edge rushers, right? JIC, just in case. So, yeah, that would be the answer. But, okay, so you're saying the other guys around him.
Because Jalen Walker has all the talent in the world. But if for the first 6 weeks of the season he's asked to be your main sack artist, which is very likely.
It's going to be hard.
I don't love that for him.
Yeah.
Especially because we were talking about versatility with Mauricio Dubon before.
Leave Dubon's name out of your mouth.
Jalen Walker's biggest strength, Carl, is what? His versatility.
Yeah.
He could stand up. He could put his hand in the dirt. He could play edge. He could play linebacker. He's going to be asked to be your primary pass rusher if JPJ's not ready to go.
Coach Stefanski was talking about just his maturity and where he's at and you know, the pre-draft buzz. And look, we've said this time and time again for Falcon fans, he fell to us. You didn't have a choice. Like, you couldn't look at the board and go, I really don't want Walker. I'm going to go past that. You couldn't do it. So they did the right thing. But when you talk about, what, 5.5 sacks, 5 tackles for loss, 2 forced fumbles in 15, this is his rookie year, in 15 appearances, that's solid. But that hamstring injury was the issue.
He was behind the eight ball.
From the start.
It kept him out.
From the start. So I think that is a guy, when you talk about what do you feel good about, you might not feel good about the quarterback situation. Fine. Put that aside. You feel good about Bijan. You feel good about Drake, who just got his bag. I feel good about Walker and year two coming in and being a difference maker. And you know, Turtle's right. The secondary and the leadership. Those are things I do feel good about. And I'm not giving, like, Ian Cunningham flowers before he deserves it. But I will say that I do think there's some synergy here. And that matters. Like, you can't have, well, I think they get along, or I think everybody's on the same page. Everybody's got to be on the same page if you're moving in the same direction. And if that doesn't happen in the NFL, it's not going to work. It's why A.J. Brown just got traded, guys. It's not going to – I don't care how talented you are. It's not going to work. And so when you start talking about the front office, I would be a guy that would tell you over the last few years, I don't know if that was there.
Well, that's why I don't want Stephon Diggs here. People keep bringing him up, Carl.
Oh, no, they want to add him?
No.
They want him here?
No, I don't want him here. No. That dude is a cancer with a capital C. I don't need that here. I got Drake London. I'm good. I don't need another number one receiver here. If Steph Diggs was going to come here on a vet minimum, I would honestly still say no. But
okay.
Can we talk about the quarterback for a second, Carl? Because here's my thing. I think people are acting like, oh my gosh, the quarterback situation, Carl, it's not figured out. Oh my gosh. But here's my thing. How big of a difference do you think it's going to be no matter who it is? So you think if Penix is the quarterback, we're going to win 4 games, but if Tua is the quarterback, we're going to win 10? No. It's going to be relatively the same. That's why I don't get all, especially the national sites putting out all these lists, Falcons, 4.5 wins, quarterback.
You think it'll be the same? I don't think it'll be the same. Somebody's got to ball out and put this team and make plays, put the team on their back at certain times and make plays. But I also think that the way the offense is going to be conducted, there will be less of that. I don't need Tua to be a superhero every Sunday, or for that matter, Michael Penix.
No, do what he's best at. Get the ball out of his hands quickly over the middle of the field. But what I'm saying, Carl, is the number of wins.
Okay.
Like, whether it's Tua or whether it's Penix, you think there's a 6-game swing there?
No, I do not.
That's what I think everybody's way over-exaggerating.
So what are they saying? Are they giving Penix more wins, or are they giving Tua more wins?
I think people are generally would say Tua would be worth a couple more wins. But again, it's 1 or 2.
Yeah.
It's not 6 or 7. So that's why the court, like, to me, the biggest misconception about this Falcons season is the uncertainty of quarterback. No matter who it is, you're going to win as many games as you're going to win. Like, this isn't, you know, Tom Brady versus Blake Bortles. Like, the gap is not that big.
Okay, so this is where I might might disagree. And we're going to have to see how it plays out. It's Dukes and Bell Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. Chris is in for Mike today. Grant's on the way. Lots of Braves news to get to, including the opportunity to sweep another series of Chris Sale on the hill tonight. And trade rumors abound.
Do it.
Tua started 78 games.
Yeah.
How many has Michael Penix started?
12. But how many of those games that Tua started was he awful in?
That's not the point. The point is...
Experience.
He's done it. And that's where I would tell you that if you're going to say there's an edge, I don't know about the skill set, the arm strength, we can talk all that stuff. Can he throw the same routes? I think they can.
Well, we know what the difference is. Penix has a rocket launcher, but he's inaccurate.
Okay.
Tua has a medium-sized arm, and he's incredible. He's the most accurate.
Okay.
So it's depending on what is Stefanski like more.
You say that, and I've seen him deliver the ball down the field deep, even going back, sorry, dog fans, to the championship game when he was at Alabama. Tua, he can sling that thing.
Well, I think the hip injury took a little bit of a toll.
It may have.
I think it did.
So with that said, though, and again, those things are debatable. But the one thing you can't debate is doing it. Whether I'm good or bad, I've done it way more. And therefore, I may be prone to know how to handle certain situations a little bit better. I may have seen a defense a couple more times than you. And so if you're going to tell me like 12 starts versus 78 is not a big deal, I will completely disagree with you. Like that's where I'm going to say he may have the edge. But it only matters, Turtle, if he's not turning it over.
Yeah.
If he's making the right reads and right plays. If he's not, then all that goes out of the window because we've seen experienced quarterbacks blow it too, right? We've seen that.
And the other variable is, let's make no mistake about it, I don't care if you tell me that the blind side's not a thing anymore in the NFL. Juwan Taylor needs to play well.
Oh, that's a good point.
That's the other thing. Right. Neither one of these guys is going to have a chance. But Carl, my thing is with in between Tua and Penix is it goes back to what I said earlier. The reason I say Penix deserved a chance.
Deserves.
Because he didn't have coaching. He didn't have the ability to here's what I always said about Penix last year. The difference between the elite quarterbacks in the NFL and a guy like Penix, Mahomes, Burrow, Josh Allen, Lamar, even Tua, they have that memory bank that you were talking about. Mm-hmm. Not only did Michael Penix Jr. not have the memory bank because he didn't have the starts, the coaching staff didn't have the help for him either. He was literally on his own out there. He was flailing in the wind. He didn't know what to do. The coaching staff didn't know what to do, and it was a mess. Imagine if Penix had Kevin Stefanski from year one. Where would he be right now?
He'd be better. There's no doubt.
I think he'd be a lot better.
He'd be better. Look, you again, and this is no secret, right? You guys know, and we've talked about it time and time again, you hired a first-time coordinator with a rookie who needed veteran help at that position from his coordinator. And so at the end of the day, yeah, I think he'd be a lot better. I'm not going to debate that. But I will say, I don't think he deserves anything. You know what? In the NFL, you earn it. And I'm sorry if you're not getting the proper coaching or the things you need. It does matter, but you still have to go play and make plays. Hadn't done enough of that.
Yeah, I still just don't think they're a 5-win team with Penix and an 11-win team with Tua. I just don't think the gulf is that big.
Coming up, we'll talk to our man Grant McCauley, guys. Should there be more concerns when it comes to where the Braves are and the fact that, look, Riley's still not hitting the way he should. Kim, not hitting. Drake's out. But yet, we're 42-20. And we got a chance for another sweep tonight. And what's this big trade rumor that's out there? Stay there. It's Dukes and Bell. Grant McCauley is here, our Braves insider. He also hosts From the Diamond, brought to you by Mark Spain. It's Dukes and Bell. Chris is in for Mike today. And Grant, feels like there's a lot going on with our Braves. Let's start first with what we saw last night, because they just find a way to get it done again. Dubon, man, biggest surprise so far this season? Has he been the biggest surprise for you?
and a couple of other. He's got to be at or near the top of the list. There have been a couple of other very pleasant surprises, including Dominic Smith. But from an everyday basis, which is essentially what Mauricio Dubon has been, even if his position changes, he's been terrific. I mean, it's just it's the clutch hits, it's the defense, it's the teammate, the fit, all of the things that Mauricio Dubon has done in a short amount of time to just feel like he belongs here. So, yeah, I would – you know what? We'll go ahead and make the ranking and put Mauricio Dubon number one and figure everybody else on the other side.
Grant, how important was it for Grant Holmes to get through six innings last night?
I think just a quality start is helpful, but as long as he looked good, whether it was five or six innings, I think you'd take that just because you were able to set up the bullpen the night before. And it's a lot of times going to be determined by matchups and things of that nature once you do get to that bullpen. But I think Grant Holmes has been a serviceable back-of-the-rotation starter. I don't think you've been really asking more of that from him. I think that if you look around at all 29 other teams, this is essentially what you have when you get to the other side of the rotation. We're not talking Chris Sale or Spencer Strider or even at this point what Bryce Elder has done or what you'd like to get out of a Schwellenbach or whoever else that would come back and affect this rotation. He's just been, I think, a stabilizer. But we'll see, you know, how long he stays in rotation once some of these other names are able to factor in for the Braves, or if they decide to do some really outside-the-box thinking as the year goes on and the trade deadline comes along.
Grant, all right, let's talk about a couple of different things. One, there's a rumor out there, Jeff Passan put it out there. I think it's kind of been in the ether. Do you feel like the Braves are going to trade for a pitcher? And if so, is it potentially Skubal, who we've been at least linked to, but we're not the only ones. There will be other teams. How do you feel about that?
No, there'll be other teams going after him if the Tigers decide to make him available. And there's not going to be a better rental player than a two-time reigning Cy Young Award winner in the American League if, in fact, he's going to be on the market. And, you know, he's going to be walking into free agency, so you are talking about a true rental. So I think that the cost obviously has to make sense on both sides. A, for the Tigers, if they decide to trade him, that they can cash in their chips if they don't believe he's coming back. And based on their arbitration situation this past year, I think Detroit might have overplayed its hand a little bit in those dealings. But that aside, I mean, there's not going to be a better pitcher available to go back to that. The Dodgers, clearly a team that has got some starting pitching problems and has a very good farm system and some very deep pockets, might decide, you know what? If we're staring at this collective bargaining agreement and we're about to have to break up the band to get below a certain level, which I assume they would have to, why don't we go in one more time and try to win another title? That could be a thing for them. I don't know. We'll see. But you can make the same argument for the Braves that, hey, if we're going to have to govern our moves differently in the future, why not go all in now? Put Tarik Skubal with Chris Sale, back in with a team that appears to be very complete outside of that, and make a run and try to win a title, and then you'll figure all the CBA stuff out on the other side. So the Braves have a wealth of pitching prospects, the likes of guys we've seen, whether that's Didier Fuentes or J.R. Richie, some others that we have yet to see at the big league level, including Cam Caminiti and some others. And you've also got some position player prospects. Those I'd be a little stingier with if we're talking about a three-month rental, even for a guy as good as Skubal. But the old saying goes, flags fly forever. What is the prospect going to be? Well, we don't know yet, but you'd certainly take another World Series flag. If you knew, you would certainly, I think, be more comfortable doing it. But this is the risk you take to try to win a title and put your club over the top, and many clubs are willing to take it, are the Braves. They're going to have to answer that, I think, in the next 6 or 8 weeks.
Grant, 2027 season, potential lockout, full lockout, whatever it may be. I think it's fairly safe to say, though, that your assessment of a true rental is accurate, because nothing to do with the Braves, but I think the price tag of what Skubal will be asking for would essentially price the Braves out. I think it would definitely be, if not far and away, the biggest contract they've ever given out for what Skubal would be looking for, right?
Yeah, and it would be. But, I mean, my question is, beyond the Braves, is what does it look like on the other side of that? Because, yes, you're talking about, you know, well, all 30 teams are going to spend to a floor now and there's a cap, but what in the world do some of the big spending clubs that are already at or over any perceived cap that we could reasonably guess along, which I don't know that it's even a good use of our time to guess along right now, but what is all this going to look like when they try to redistribute some of these players? Because if we got a salary cap of $245 million, you tell me who goes and who stays on the Los Angeles Dodgers, for example.
Yeah, it's a really good point. Hey, Braves trying to go for a sweep tonight. Chris Sale on the hill. It's easy to say this because we're 42-20. But as Turtle and I were getting into this conversation earlier, Grant, about Alex Anthopoulos, and I said the best decision actually was the managerial decision. Walt Weiss has been great. Describe what you think his secret has been so far this season. Is it just the management of the players, the relationships, or just the way he goes about his business?
No, I think he's done everything well, but you bring up the relationships, and that lends itself to the continuity of really a lot of what's been established. He understands the organization. He understands the Braves on a level where, you know, when you change organizations, you have to kind of come in and learn how they do it. And sure, you've got a say too, but it can be a process of trying to feel those things out. And I think that the Braves just knew what they had there, and they were very comfortable with making this change. And Walt has managed things his own way, just like he told me he would do in his managerial press conference. And when I asked about playing for this guy or coaching with this guy, you know, what do you take from this? And he's like, I take lots of stuff, but it's got to be my own voice, my own decisions, my own methods of doing it. And I think he's been able to stay true to that. And the number one thing that I see from Walt Weiss or hear from Walt Weiss is, you're not going to talk him into taking credit for 42-20. He will give that credit flat out to the players, to the coaches, to the people behind the scenes, to the people on support staffs, to the training staff, to just about everything other than how did Walt Weiss manage the club on this given day? And I think that kind of leadership and the, you know, ability to see that and, you know, have people follow you and know that you're not out there just kind of getting the credit for all of it, that this is to be equally distributed among everybody. We all share in that. I think it's something that lends itself to the fabric of a really good, well-run club. And Walt Weiss has been a good arbiter of all of that, to use another $2 word.
So when it comes to the left field position, Grant, I'm not saying you need an all-star at every position, but the platoon of Dubon and Yaz is not exactly lighting the world on fire right now, as good as Dubon has been. Do you feel like that's an area that should be upgraded?
I don't know that that's the top of their list. I think if you were to make a or if you were to really take all of their possible needs out there, I don't think that that's at or near the top of my list. No, I think that starting rotation makes a lot more sense to me because, yes, you've got some guys getting healthy, but I still think that's the number one area of upgrade. I just don't think you pigeonhole yourself to one particular position. No, you're not looking for a new right fielder, a new first baseman, or a new third baseman, even if you're frustrated with a third baseman's production. I think, you know, outside of those spots, center field, second base, yeah, you've got guys that are there. Maybe it is a shortstop. Maybe it's a left fielder. Maybe it's just a big bat that you plug in at DH that just makes a ton of sense there. I don't think they're necessarily just looking at it like if we can only upgrade one spot, it's going to be left field. Can they get better there production-wise? Yes. Yaz has looked a lot better lately, though, so my level of worry about that is actually pretty low. And I'm honestly not looking for too many creative ways to take at bats away from Mauricio Dubon, considering what he's able to do, especially in the big situations. So, you know, I think that they're going to have some money to spend because they have the Jerks and Profar suspension money, amongst other things, that they could distribute some ways or you know, some way or some ways plural to make the club better. And who's to say that maybe even adding yet another bullpen arm wouldn't be a bad idea for the Braves when you consider how important that could be in October?
What's the deal? Just want clarity on this Austin Wins situation. Mm-hmm. They traded for him, and what's it mean? Because I know they had to make a roster move there.
Yeah, not a lot. I mean, they shifted Sean Murphy to the 60-day IL, cleared a 40-man spot there. They had to bring up an outfielder who had a minor league opt-out and then option him back to the minors. And then they added Austin Wins, who they picked up from AAA for the Angels. And then they designated Chadwick Tromp for assignment. This was based on just the potential of maybe a little bit more offensive upside from Wins over the course of his career. He was really good last year. He was doing fine in AAA the last couple of weeks. Not that you really want to hang your hat on that. They just felt like there might be a little bit more punch there since they're going to be in a timeshare for at least a couple of more weeks, it sounds like, till Drake Baldwin gets back.
Okay. Great stuff, Grant. As always, man, we'll see what happens tonight. Feels like there's just a lot going on with the Braves, and that's because there is. We'll see what Chris Sale does tonight. We'll talk to you tomorrow, man. Appreciate you.
Thanks, guys.
All right, that's Grant McCauley, guys. Check him out from the Diamond. We'll come back. People are saying he looked gas. I'm saying it's the coach's fault. Or maybe we're just not giving credit where credit's due. It's Dukes and Bell. So, would you prefer a lifetime ban or some jail time? I'm asking for a friend. It's Dukes and Bell, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. The guy that ran on the court last night, and Chris, you described it, he really didn't even get the selfie with Wimby. He's screaming, Wimby! And you see the replay, and Wimby's like smiling, like, you gonna do this right now? But he even posted it, but he got arrested, but he's banned for life. I prefer that over what? How much jail time was he potentially looking at? Because
a couple of months.
At least.
Yeah. Well, this is a no. First of all, for those who don't pick up what Carl's putting down, if you haven't seen the picture, this jackleg gets the picture with Wemby, but he's too damn short, Carl, and he doesn't get Wemby's head in the photo.
Well, he's only 7'5".
It's a picture of Wemby's chest in the photo. You could have gone to the shoe store and taken a picture with the mannequin and gotten the same effect. Here's the thing, Carl. If you spend 90 days in jail, your life as you know it is over.
Yes.
You're getting fired. You're losing your income. You're going to fall behind on your mortgage. Like, what? All your bills are going to go to shambles.
Yep.
Give me the lifetime ban.
No, I'm with you.
And you knew that was at risk anyway when you were going to do it.
He did. I mean, he took a shot. Luckily, nobody was hurt except for the Spurs' feelings, because they blew an opportunity last night where they had a chance to go up at home and then they blow a 14-point lead. Let me hear Karl-Anthony Towns, because here's the deal. I'm not going to buy this whole thing about Wimby being gassed. Let's stop making excuses. When he's great, it's, oh, he's unstoppable. When he's not good, 6-for-21 last night, even though he scored 26 points, you go, well, he's gassed. No. Karl-Anthony Towns played his butt off last night, as well as Brunson, when it mattered most. Dukesism in the fourth quarter. Let me hear Kat talk about Mike Brown on Karl-Anthony Towns before we hear Kat.
He was amazing. I mean, the double-double was huge. He came up with some timely buckets for us. He's a problem. You put a small guy on him, he's got a chance to offense a rebound. You put a big guy on him, he's got a chance to pick and pop and go around guys. So we got to just keep trying to move him around based on who's guarding him throughout the course of the ball game. But he was huge for us with his double-double.
Chris, most important player. I've been saying it since they played us. Not their best. You saw Brunson at the end of that game. But if he plays like this, I think it's going to be very hard for the Spurs to win this series.
His defensive effort last night, I've never seen that before from him. I mean, seriously, guy. I said this before, it's worth repeating. What's his reputation around the league?
Soft.
Soft, flopper, complainer, goes to the ref. They're being too hard on me. Not last night. This dude was a warrior. I mean, I don't know what. Maybe he's just matured. Maybe he's like feeling the moment of the weight of the finals behind him. This dude put on a clinic last night on how to keep Wemby from taking over the game. I couldn't have been more impressed. You're right.
Let me hear Kat talk about defending Wemby.
He was amazing. I mean,
just try to make it difficult. He's an amazing player. He's a one-of-a-kind player in this NBA the league has ever seen, and you just try to make it as difficult as possible.
Yeah, I mean, Mike Brown's praising him. He's just talking about Wimby generally speaking. What's your take on Wimby? Because I told you earlier in the show, I said, look, we can't anoint these guys.
Bum.
Right? I love him. He's great. He's good for the game. He's fun to watch. But he's not a champion yet. And people talk about Wimby in this space as if he has already achieved greatness. He's ascending to it. But if he doesn't achieve that this year, it doesn't mean, again, he won't be great. It's like LeBron. He didn't win it the first time he got in there. But I don't want to give it to him. And so part of this is, you know, this may be the toughest task for the Spurs. But I got to tell you, man, Mitch Johnson, I thought he blew some stuff last night. You know, the Harper kid, Ron Harper's kid, by the way, for those who don't know, was incredible. And I just thought he should have been in the game way more than De'Aaron Fox, who was struggling. And you said Fox has just he's been bad as of late, right?
He's been bad and he's not healthy. That's the real problem. He missed a bunch of games earlier in the playoffs and he has not, because Carl, we all know, Swiper, what's his thing? Speed.
Yep.
That's his game. He doesn't have that extra gear right now. His shots are flat, too. The other thing, too, Carl, about Wemby, we're looking for the next one right now in the NBA. LeBron is fading off into the sunset.
Yes.
So we are chomping at the bit to get our next guy because we went from MJ to Kobe to LeBron to Wemby. But Wemby isn't ready to take over the league yet, to your point.
He's not.
So you're looking to anoint this guy because you want to say, okay, perfect. We don't have to have this period where we don't have a true face of the league. Wemby's going to be the face of the league. Because let's be honest, Jokic, not the face of the league. Giannis was on a trajectory to be the face of the league.
Yep.
Not anymore.
Both champions, both MVPs. You're right.
Who's the face of the league? Luka? Not yet.
No. No. Soft body's not it.
So it's going to be, and I think that's why people are so eager to put him on a pedestal that he hasn't earned yet.
Yeah, and I'll say this, too. We'll see how this series plays out. It's Dukes and Bell Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. Turtles in with me, obviously. So tonight we will have a night show starting at 6. But he's not going to be on it. I'll say this about Wemby.
I'm going to Longhorns.
Oh, are you really?
Yeah, me and the girlfriend.
You know what? I like Longhorns. The margarita there is really good, by the way.
One margarita.
I'm just saying. It's good.
Well, she's coming over after.
Oh, is she?
Yeah.
Okay. That sounds intimate. I will say this about Wemby, too. Guys, I know he's 7'5", but he's not a true center. And I know people want to say, well, how the hell, what do you mean, Dukes? Look, they're banging on him, and the Knicks, with their big bodies, are doing the same thing they did to us. And if you allow them to continue to do this for 6 more games, he will be done. He is rail thin, okay? And so, you know, I brought this up to Turtle, and I said, put Luke Kornet in there, man. You can laugh, but at least he's got a bigger body, and let Wemby do Wemby things. He is the one guy that, you know, he's more of a creator and really, to be honest with you, a big stretch four than he is a true center. How many times you see him in the post? How many times you see him down there making that's not what he does. He'd rather face you up, take you off the dribble. So my point is, like, the Knicks are like, cool, you want to play that way, but we're going to put our big bodies on you. Mitchell came in last night, broke hand, and still had an effect. I think the Knicks and the way they played and the game plan worked. We'll see if it works in game two.
Is that not one of the weirder stories, by the way?
Which one?
The Mitchell Robinson injury thing. We still have no idea what happened. They said it was a non-basketball related thing that happened in between games.
I asked Mike, did he punch something?
Well, you know why they say that? Because they're calling it a boxer's hand injury, which is where you get the metacarpal on the pinky, which is like I'm pointing on the bottom back half of my hand. And that usually means when you make contact with something that doesn't give back, and the bone fractures as a result of that. And the weird thing about it is, too, Carl, right before that, during one of his press avails, he, for some reason, opened up about mental health.
He did. That's
and
true.
And now people are putting two into, did he have a bout of anxiety or depression? Yeah. So that whole injury, but to your point, no harm, no foul. He was able to do what he needed to do last night.
He came in and he was the same Mitchell Robinson we saw in our series. Hey, let me hear Wemby talk about Jalen Brunson. Brunson, by the way, finished 13 points in the fourth quarter, okay? 30 points in the game. He didn't shoot the ball extremely well. And I said to Chris, like, that may be his worst performance in this series. And if you think it was because of Russ, because they had time off, so be it. But I don't think Jalen Brunson shoots 12 for 31 and 2 for 9 from three-point land in games 2, 3, and 4. I do not believe that. Here's what Wemby said about Brunson.
He's an elite player, and we got the chance that we're going to have many more chances. It's a first to four series, so we're going to have time to work on it.
All right. Well, look, adjustments need to be made. If they lose this series because Mitch Johnson doesn't want to make adjustments, like his rotations, leaving guys in. Guys, they got the sixth man of the year, okay? You may or may not even be aware of this. He hardly played last night.
Yeah, Vassell. What do you have, two?
Keldon Johnson. He hardly played. You're like, what's the deal, 8 minutes?
Yeah.
So those are the kind of things that get you beat when you've been so good through the year, and I think for the first time, this is just me, like his team's been better than everybody they've played. And now they're meeting a team that may just be better than them, and you have to make adjustments. 404-726-0929. Your texts are always welcome as we get ready to wrap up a show. Tomorrow we're at Twin Peaks in Kennesaw. Come through. Mike and I will be there. Mike's back tomorrow, 2 to 6. We'd love to see you. One other thing. I want you to hear Wemby because he admits he was bad last night.
Every team guards differently, you know. I'm going to figure it out. It's, I was bad tonight. It's not more complicated than that.
I sucked. I wasn't good. 26 points, 12 rebounds. Sounds good. But when it mattered, he wasn't there, and they really clamped him down. I think you gave me this number, Day-Day, one of you guys, 2 for 12 when Cat was the primary defender on him.
Yep.
So when Cat was defending Wimby, he wasn't really good. He hit 2 shots, 2 of 12. Guys, that's not good.
But, Carl, if we're being honest, and again, this requires people to do their research, which they don't do.
Do your research.
Go back and look at his stats in the OKC series. He had 3 big games. He was not good in their losses. Go back and look at his numbers. He was not putting up 30 and 10 every game in that series. You can slow him down, to your point, whether it's fatigue or whatever. And, Carl, I don't think Mitch Johnson can make the adjustments.
You don't think so?
I don't know if he's ready to.
Okay, well,
that
look.
That is a young cat he getting is. An opportunity.
Guess what? This is when you rely on Pop. Okay? Use what you've got. It's not like Pop wasn't there. He's been at all these games. He's sitting up there in the suite chilling. Tim Duncan's there. Damian Robb. All these guys, they've been there, done it. Bruce Bowen was there last night. We forget all these Spurs that have won chips. Manu was there. You got help. It's not like Mitch, he goes into a room and he's going to have to do it himself. My point is, if you don't figure it out, this is going to be the reason why the Spurs end up losing. It will not be because of talent. They are talented enough to be here and win this thing.
You see ESPN got caught using AI last night with Manu?
No, what'd they do?
They photoshopped a picture of him going to break, and they got called out for it hard on the internet.
It was not real?
They're like, why are you using a fake picture of Manu Ginobili, AI, in the middle of an NBA Finals broadcast?
Ooh.
Just get a real picture of him.
Yeah.
And then they came out with a statement and said, we are reevaluating our AI processes and may not use them going forward throughout the series.
That's weak.
That's so weak.
That's really
talk
weak.
Talk about cutting corners. It's the NBA Finals.
Yeah.
Come on, guys.
I didn't see that. But no, man, look, it's not surprising. AI, it's coming. Hey, as we wrap the show up, man, Braves tonight. Another sweep. Chris Sale.
They have trouble sweeping. I don't know why.
Mm.
It's always 2 out of 3, but I'm going to say with Sale on the mound, they get it done.
I think so, too. I mean, he's been so good. Even in the start, you said it, the two they lost.
Yeah, he should be 10-3 right now. 10 wins on June 2nd.
Yeah, he's 8-3, and as we get ready to get out of here, the one rumor that's out there, and Grant addressed it, we talked about it a little bit. I don't even know if we talked about it on our pre-show today. Maybe that was just us talking before the show today, but we brought up Tarik Skubal and the fact that if you're going to make a move, this might be the guy. He would be a rental, but then Jeff Passan came out about midway through the show and kind of confirmed this.
Yeah, he said that the Dodgers, the Braves, and the Brewers are among the teams that would be interested if his services are made available. $17 million is what you would owe him for the remainder of his contract on the season, and it's just a matter of what it would cost. Is it going to cost you 1 prospect, 2 prospects, 3 prospects? Is it going to cost you a major league player like a J.R. Richie, somebody that you're using right now? Is it somebody that you're going to be able to say it was worth it to get rid of him in the future, like an Owen Murphy, who's one of their top prospects?
Mm.
Probably.
Yeah, it is.
But you know what it is? You know what it also is, Carl?
What?
Worth it!
I think so, too. I think we got to go all in. Hey, guys, we'll be here tomorrow, 2 o'clock. We'll be live at Twin Peaks in Kennesaw. We'd love to get a chance to see you out there. Come on through. Day-Day, we got to get out of here, man, and clear our throat. I mentioned Turtles in from Mike today. Great job, Chris. Appreciate you filling in. As always, it's good to talk with you. I mean, we see each other, but we don't do shows like we once did. Eric Slaughter, by the way, will be in for you tonight from 6 to 10. So stay there. He's got you covered. Guys, here's the thing. As we talk about the Braves, and I'm getting all these text messages about the Braves and stuff that you've said today, Chris, again, give them your Twitter handle so they can yell at you.
Yeah, at C Thomas Radio. Send all your compliments and, more importantly, the stuff you want to yell at me.
Okay, yeah, because don't yell at me. Yell at him, okay? I'm on your side. Man of the people. Hey, Day-Day, great job behind the glass as always. As always, been off this week, and Day-Day's been doing all the things. Appreciate you. Appreciate the guests. Go online, odyssey.com. Subscribe to Dukes and Bell. You get all of our content. You see all the guests and stuff there, and you'll get up-to-date breaking news as well. All right, we got to get out of here, man. Chris, clear your throat.
Falcons fans, don't judge a book by its cover. Kevin Stefanski is coming here to win football games. Two-time coach of the year, helped a quarterback set rookie records in the NFL. This guy knows how to coach. Matt Ryan, Ian Cunningham, Kevin Stefanski, that is one heck of a trio that you should be excited about managing your favorite franchise in the NFL. This guy is going to make the offense better. He's going to help whoever is at quarterback. The last 2 years in Cleveland, while a blemish on his resume, A, do not define him, and B, was not his fault.
Hey, the best decision this offseason for Alex Anthopoulos had nothing to do with players. Don't misunderstand me. He did sign some really good players that are contributing to this win, to this team, and to this team's winning. But the managerial decision was big. And I think a lot of people dismiss the fact that Walt Weiss, it wasn't his job necessarily automatically. They interviewed AA. The organization had an open mind. They wanted to see his vision. They wanted to understand what he thought needed to be done. Guess what? He's doing a terrific job. Let's not discount the relationships and how he's managing these guys as to why the Braves are in first place. And as Chris said, 22 games over 500. Hey, if you love the show,
tell your friends.
If you don't,
you're dating. You don't want the Braves to sign Scooble because he's injured.